This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing. They act as your virtual marketing department, designing and implementing cost-effective marketing strategies that grow your business. For a free workshop, email them at workshop@extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
On this episode of our podcast, I speak with the founder of Artisan. She shares with us her fascinating journey in coming to Canada from Russia and the lessons in entrepreneurship that she learned from her father. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Dasha from Artisan Kombucha, and I'm really excited today to be on the Ottawa Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hi, Dasha. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your company?
Well, my name is Dasha, as I said, and I'm the co-founder of Artisan Kombucha. Artisan Kombucha is based in Perth, Ontario, and we supply Ottawa and Kingston with a beverage that's called kombucha. And kombucha is a fermented probiotic beverage that's based on tea. So it's a green tea. You use a green tea and sugar to ferment it for about 14 to 16 days. And the end result is probiotic, slightly effervescent, really good for your gut, low in sugar, high in antioxidants, and it's a rapidly growing in popularity beverage, even though it has been in the world for thousands of years. My grandmother and I, in the Soviet Union, made kombucha before it was ever popular. And then recently in North America, in the last 5 years, 5-8 years, it started becoming more and more popular. And now with the big giant companies paving the way, they're helping smaller companies and medium-sized companies like us come to the market.
Nice. So how did you get in this business?
So originally, I finished a business degree and a women's studies degree at Carleton University. I came to Canada when I was 17, so about 13 years ago. And I come from a line of entrepreneurs. My father was an entrepreneur. He was one of the first early entrepreneurs when the Soviet Union collapsed. Mm. So it's kind of in my blood. And so once the university was finished, I worked for a nonprofit organization. I worked for a couple of other organizations. But I ultimately wanted to be my own business owner. And I met my partner, Sebastian Armand, and together we just had that vision of, well, back then we were really fired up of a vision of creating an organic homestead and growing vegetables and converting them into food. So we went out there, we bought land, we started growing produce, and very quickly, within a year, we ate through all our savings, realized that farming isn't as glorious as it's sold in a lot of, I would say, books, you know, almost like hipster books that are geared towards, you know, right. Grow food, be wealthy on your 3 acres. So because things went sour pretty fast, even though Sebastian had a lot of experience in growing food, we quickly had to start thinking more business-like. So, okay, we have this produce, what can we do with it? Let's turn to kale chips. That year was 2014, 2015, happened to be the kale chip craze. Kale was all over the news, everybody was into kale, and we happened to grow 2 acres of kale that we converted into kale chips. Went and sold at the farmer's market, we had lineups, went to the stores just gobbled us up, and that was the beginning of our, you know, introduction into the retail world, wholesale world. So we had to figure out how to put a wholesale price on it, kept going with it. And then within about a year, the kale chip craze diminished. Like people just got
over. It only lasted a year.
It only lasted a year. It was a year and a half. And then it just kind of, just people were like, you know what? This is a very expensive snack. I can probably make it at home or make do without it. So people started buying less of it. And because they were buying less of it, we had to quickly come up with other ideas to sell and to sustain ourselves. So there came the gluten-free crackers made with, again, kale and squash and whatever else we could grow from our farm. Then came the water kefir, because we were into probiotic foods, and water kefir is just one of the fermented probiotic foods. Kombucha came at the same time, and we were just putting it out at the farmer's market and just seeing how things did. So we wanted to know what the stores would take out of everything we produced. So over time, very quickly, the store said kombucha. You know, there's we hear about kombucha, we know about kombucha, our customers are asking for kombucha. Okay, so we focused on the kombucha production. Even though we still dragged a little bit of the gluten-free crackers because they actually did really well. But at some point, we just had to make a decision. When you go a little bigger to service stores, you have to make equipment investments and other investments. where you really have to just, and time investments, and say, okay, I can only focus on one thing. Let's focus on the kombucha.
So was that based on actual sales that you had done, and you said, yep, okay, that was spiking, or was it based on the feedback from the retail stores saying, hey, you should go produce this product?
Well, the retail stores were there. We supplied the health food stores, and they were thrilled with all our products, really. They were happy with the crackers, with the kale chips, with the kombucha. But we ourselves saw that with the kombucha, there was a little bit more excitement with our customers. There's a little bit more people coming saying, hey, versus people saying, oh, you made crackers, which there were some people who were excited, but not as excited as kombucha. So it was just an intuition of like, okay, there's the interest. People are asking more about this. They like our product. At some point, people started saying, oh, hey, your taste better than, you know, the big brands that we saw, we got at the store. We're like, okay, we got something interesting going on. So we just kept going with it. And at that point in 2015, we were approached by a group of individuals who were forming a commercial food hub in Smith Falls. Hmm. Smith Falls is about 40 minutes away from Ottawa, and a group of very passionate individuals said, okay, there's government money available. Let's take that money and create a commercial producer-based hub that would allow producers like us to move in, use the commercial space, all the equipment, and then use their channels of distribution to sell our product. And we just had to give feedback as to what equipment we would need. So they applied, got the equipment, got the funding, opened the food hub, hired people, and we moved in and started producing. So the advantage, because with food production, you need to have a commercial kitchen that's inspected by the health unit, that's approved. And commercial kitchens are extremely expensive in Ottawa, especially because you're paying for the rent. Sometimes you have to pay for, you know, per hour of usage of equipment. The costs of using a commercial kitchen are really, really high. So by being able to move into a shared commercial kitchen where we could book our time slots, where we could have our room, but not pay for the full cost, sharing it with other producers, was amazing. That's what gave us the advantage to actually move in into the market and produce a high quality product for the standards of health unit and everything else. So we did that, and then within a year, we pretty much outgrew the capacity of the food hub because there's only so much room that they can allocate for our production. There's other producers as well.
Sorry to interrupt, but just so our listeners understand, so were you at this point, you're selling the product, were you still selling it just primarily in Perth, or had you expanded outside of Perth and into Ottawa and Ontario? Or?
Yeah, so to go back, 2014 is when we did the farmers market in Perth, but 2015 we started doing the farmers market in Ottawa. And by doing the Lansdowne farmers market and the Carp farmers market, it gave us an advantage to start moving into stores, because a lot of business owners, a lot of restaurant owners, they come to farmers markets, and if they like your product, they'll say, oh, how about we, you know, start featuring your product in my store or in my restaurant or in my coffee shop? So it's an incredible entry point to the overall food market. Like, yes, you can go door to door, which we did too. We called people, we would drop in with a six pack and introduce ourselves and say, hey, here's a six pack of kombucha. You know, your manager's not here, that's okay. Have him or her try it. Let us know if it's any good, if you want to carry it, and we'd love to supply you.
So is that a lesson you would give to someone that's thinking of starting to get in the food products business, is to target farmers markets, A, yes, from a market research perspective, and B, you never know who's going to be there buying it and trying it. They may be a buyer for an organization. See, that never would have occurred to me. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. I personally think that farmers markets is such a huge untapped potential. Like, from just even a money perspective, farmers markets generate over $1 million in sales per market if all vendors combine. So it's a huge pool of customers that are coming to buy this huge diversity of products. And yes, as a food producer, especially if you're a local food producer, because the only requirement is that you have to be a local food producer, whether you make cookies or make kombucha or grow kale, gotta be local, come to the market. It's very affordable to be at the market comparing to a commercial lease of a storefront, per se. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to get into it. It's very easy to build up the volume of loyal customers. And there's so many success stories of businesses, like, for example, Grow Your Roots in Canada. Melanie, she started by selling her vegetarian dishes at the Carp Farmers Market. Within a year, she grew in so much popularity and demand that she started her own catering business. And then within the next year, she opened up her own cafe storefront. So she has a catering business, a cafe storefront, and it's all has been built up from the farmers market. It gave her the funds, the customers, to then go into the world. And she's not the only one. Wilkie's Bakery is another really successful example. They did the same thing, started baking bread, bringing it to the market, Carp Farmers Market, and now they've opened up their first bakery in Pembroke. They're gearing up to open up their second bakery. Wow. So yeah, and even with us, the same thing, the Carp Farmers Market, it gives you the weekly cash flow, steady, you know, stable cash flow that businesses really need to keep going. So with if we were to just sell retail, most times you're paid on net 30. So you brought your product in, and then you have to wait 30 days to actually be paid, which creates a bit of
that's not always great for a small business.
No, it's right. Horrible.
Yeah.
For a small business, it's very hard. It's very hard to grow when there's all that money that has to be paid to you, and you need to pump out more to bring it to more stores, as opposed to going to the farmer's market, you know, getting paid every Saturday, and then going back home with ideas on what flavors are working the best for customers. When, you know, when you're talking about your product, saying things that actually people resonate with more, then, because sometimes I find that a lot of companies will sit in the office and they'll come up with a strategy and then they'll just start pushing it without really knowing their customer or the market. The farmer's market gives me the ability to see my customer every Saturday. I know what my customer looks like. I know what they like. I know what kind of grocery bags they carry. I know where else they go shopping. So it becomes such an incredible marketing tool for us.
Well, what we emphasize with Extension Marketing, market research. But it sounds like you've hit on a formula that's the ultimate market research. It's live. It's in person. It's they're really telling you how they feel about your product with their wallet.
Yes.
Most market research we would do for our companies, for our clients, involve, you know, surveying or maybe some person-to-person type of interviewing, but we have never, that I can remember, ever asked anybody to say, okay, really, how do you feel about it? Is it worth X amount of dollars or not? Whereas you're getting that feedback every time you're at the farmer's market. Yeah, that's fascinating.
And we get paid for it. And I'm actually amazed and surprised, you know, thousands, like 20,000 people come just for the Garlic Fest in Carp. And I'm always amazed that companies, you know, real estate companies in the area, whichever companies, don't go and say, hey, we'd like to sponsor the Garlic Fest. Put up my banner, give me a little table to stand there and talk about my company or what we're doing. That's it. And you have thousands of people walking past your booth. These are your customers. They live in the area. They come from Stittsville, Canada. You know, if we're talking about Carp Farmers Market, if it's Lansdowne, that it's all the downtown core. It's amazing. That's such a direct way to connect with your customer.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people are not using that potential. A lot of companies, it's so untapped.
Now, you mentioned earlier on in the podcast that your father had an influence on you in terms of becoming an entrepreneur. Was there any lesson that he gave you that has resonated with you now that you're on this journey, this entrepreneurial path?
Yeah, so my father, he's incredible. I mean, he started business when the Soviet Union collapsed, when there was no such a thing as capitalism, really. And they had to, like, just learn themselves from scratch what it is to create a business, what it is to, you know, create distribution, supply, all of that. And one thing that he always emphasizes is diversity. Well, thinking long term, you know, getting a good lawyer on hand for everything that you do, but also diversity. He says if you're just trying to create one product, so say with kombucha, you know, if I just wanted to create one product and survive one product at my scale and even at medium sized scale, it's very hard. You want to be as diversified as possible. So my father, he had a financial company, he had a security company, he had a food business, he had a cosmetics company. And at different times, those different companies helped him survive because the demand goes up and down, supply goes up and down, right? And we've seen that with our business. Funny enough, one product that we haven't dropped is bone broth. We make bone broth as well, but under the brand of Agape Gardens, which was our farm. And bone broth is, for people out there, it's an incredible product that has huge demand and there's absolutely no supply. It's that health niche that's extremely well advertised by influencers, by, you know, social media, I would say doctors and health professionals who talk about health on their social media. So people listen to it and say, we want bone broth, but there's actually no one producing it.
This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing. Extension Marketing acts as your virtual marketing department, designing and implementing cost-effective marketing strategies to grow your business. Email them at workshop@extensionmarketing.com to procure a free one-hour marketing consultation to grow your business.
We start producing it because that was an extension of our lifestyle, and we haven't been able to drop it because with no advertising except our online store and word of mouth, we get such steady sales, and those sales help keep us afloat in the winter months when the sales out for kombucha slightly drop. It's seasonal. Kombucha is a beverage, skyrockets in the summer, spring, summer, fall. But winter, yes, people are not drinking as much cold beverages as they are in the summer.
So is that part of your marketing strategy? You mentioned influencers. Is that a...
Yes, influencers are... I'm a huge believer in social media. Huge believer because... and influencers, that's all I think about. And, you know, at our scale, I can't afford to pay an influencer to talk about our product. But on a human level, I'm able to go out there, meet these people. There's some influencers in Ottawa. Be good friends with them. Just give them shout outs on social media. And then they give me shout outs that helps move our product forward. And it's all for free right now. And it's just creating human connections, being really nice, really kind, giving a couple bottles to someone for free and just hearing that response. So we have a really good reputation in Ottawa. We like a lot of people really love us just for the story, how we do things, how we're committed to quality. So people are very eager to promote us as well on their social media because it helps them, helps us. Yeah. And networking in real life and networking on social media, I find is similar. I know some people are angry. Oh, I don't get enough likes on my post. I don't get, you know, as much attention as I want on my post. Well, did you go out there and like people's posts? Did you go out there commenting on people's posts? No. So why do you expect people to come to you? You got to do the legwork. You got to do the work of going out there and making yourself visible.
I couldn't agree more, especially when it comes to digital or social media. You've got to be willing to, it has to be reciprocal in nature, for sure. And the other thing, too, I think too many people get caught up in is they get hung up on numbers. So what's more important, that you have you have engagement of 10 to 20 people or 100 people, but what if those 10 to 20 are the right 10 to 20? And that's what we really try to focus on with our clients. Would you say that's true in your business as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I have seen some companies who are similar to us pay or do things just to raise the numbers on social media, whether it's Instagram or Facebook, the likes, the following, but I see that it doesn't translate into the actual reputation or where they are in terms of stores. On our social media, we have a lot of business owners who like our Instagram or Facebook, restaurant owners, health food stores owners, things like that. And just having, for me, social media is actually also networking with other businesses. That's how I know what's happening, where everybody's going. Like, it's a very important tool for me to even know, as an industry, where are we going? You know, what are other people doing? So I use it to connect with customers, but also to network with other business owners and other businesses that I like that are related to mine, but maybe in California or you know, in Europe. I found myself this year really connecting with kombucha producers all over the world and then learning about what challenges they have in their areas. Because, you know, we're as small producers, we're always tempted to say, oh, you know, those bigger kombucha producers, they,
right.
No, you know, worse quality, you know, they're not as good as ours and blah, blah, blah. But then I talked to some producers in Europe who are small scale and they don't have big giant producers like we have in North America. And they tell me they're struggling. They're struggling because the big brands, what they do is they come into the market, they make the product mainstream, they're at Costco, you know, they're big, big stores. And now people, the mainstream population, all of a sudden now knows what kombucha is. When you don't have those giants coming into Costco and bigger, you know, wholesale outlets, then the population doesn't really know what your product is and why they need to buy it.
Well, and think of what that would, if you had to initiate that yourself, think of the marketing dollars required to do that.
It would be impossible.
It would be impossible, right, for most small businesses. So
yes.
Ideally, you're riding this wave, that someone else has created for you. And at the end of the day, your product's going to comparable. It should stand up on its own 2 feet.
Absolutely.
Right?
I 100% agree.
So you've talked a lot about marketing. Are you doing the marketing yourself directly? Like I want to get into one of the our constant themes on this podcast is as entrepreneurs, all the different hats we have to wear. So can you take our listeners a little bit through how you would prioritize your time?
How we prioritize our time? That's a very good question. So for me, social media has to be almost intuitively on the go. I realized the value in actually scheduling posts and creating a uniform strategy and the uniform vision. Because we are a little bit more smaller scale or more on the grounds, I try to capture moments as we go. So, you know, it's a nice day outside, it's a little sunnier, you know, grab a bottle of kombucha, put it against a really nice background, you know, and put a post up saying, great day, time to drink kombucha, something like that, or Valentine's Day, or, you know, we're in a new store, or this person dropped by. So I try to make it really, really, like, fast and relevant, timely. However, that wouldn't work as well if we were just slightly bigger, because then you really need to, you need a strategy, you need a vision, you need your social media to look, it's a business card. Like, Instagram has really become a business card. You'd no longer look at people's websites. Like, very rarely you would look at people's websites now. You go on their Instagram, you go on their Facebook. If it looks good overall, that's a good business. And then you can start poking at maybe Instagram stories or Facebook stories to really see, oh, is there anything really interesting going on in their lives besides the picture perfect, you know, Instagram post. And that's where I feel that's how things are going right now. And we're gearing up for the same thing. And to prioritize, it's hard. I really enjoy doing social media. I've had a lot of requests over the last year from individuals to take over. They just, you know, write me emails saying, you know, I'd love to work for you. I'd love to take over your social media, be that person for you. And for now, I'm just not ready because I really enjoy myself.
but at some point, the business is going to get to the point where you're going to have to let it go.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. And my plan is to let go of the business, social media, and focus on my own brand. Like me as a person and the ideas, the thoughts that I have, similar to Luke from, you know, the past owner of Freeform Fitness. I really love what he's doing. He's building a personal brand that's separate from the other project that he has done, and I think there's huge value in that.
Well, because if you can build your personal brand to a certain level, then every brand that is now associated with your personal brand just rises accordingly.
Absolutely.
Right? So
yes.
It's something I advise young people all the time that are figuring out how to start their careers, whether it be entrepreneurs or wanting to work for someone, is focus on your personal brand first and foremost. Try to understand what that is and what you want your reputation to be. And Ottawa is a big, small town, as I'm sure you've discovered. So everybody knows everybody. So you know, your personal brand really represents it means a lot.
Absolutely.
In terms of, you know, what you can do for your business, what you can do as an employee, it really comes down to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My sister, she's Anastasia Smolentseva. She's a master's of communications, and she works for a really good bigger company. And she said that one thing that she's lacking is she doesn't have her own personal, you know, Facebook, blog, Instagram. So one of her resolutions for 2018 was to create that, because she's like, it's a must. It's no longer a choice whether or not you want to do it. No, you have to do it. Right. You have to have that personal branding out there.
And now that you've said that on this podcast, it's out there in the public. Now she's got no choice now. We'll do part two at the end of 2018.
Okay.
That'll be the first question I ask you. Did your sister follow through or not?
Yeah.
So back to kind of, you know, your routine. So are you a morning person? It's interesting because I find it's almost an even split. I get entrepreneurs in here that say, I'm up at, you know, 4 a.m. and I do my thing. And I get others that say, I'm up at 10, but I'm up till 3 in the morning. What about yourself?
Well, I am a proud mother of 3 children, all under the age of 8, 7, 5, and 3. So
you have no choice.
I have no choice. I have to wake up in the morning around 6, 7 to get them ready. But to be honest, what I've started doing, I started putting my phone on airplane mode. You know, I get the alarm that goes off, and then my phone is on airplane mode. until about 11 a.m. noon, because I want to be really, like, the bigger projects that I have going on right now, I need to really just dedicate the time to them. And then noon is when I turn my phone back on, and then I have a stream of notification, missed calls, you know, thousands of things to distract me with, all relevant to my life and my business, but a distraction. So then when I'm a little more tired, there's lunchtime, I get onto the distractions on other things that I need to do, people I need to call back. And then, you know, when once kids come back from school, 4 o'clock is, I get them ready for bed, 6, 7, they go to bed. And then 7, 8, I start working again until midnight, 1 a.m. It just, and what's interesting about, I really agree with Gary Vaynerchuk. I really enjoy following him. And he says, you know, don't tell me you want to become a successful entrepreneur and you're not willing to work long hours. You know, I don't go watching Netflix after I'm done my work. Most of my weekends are spent working. But that's the only way you actually can get ahead. There's no magic formula. I'm not smarter than other people. I just work hard.
I couldn't agree more. It's funny you say that. I was at talking to a graduating business program class at Algonquin College back in the spring, and where they said, you know, what's the one thing that make a difference? Well, the only thing you really can control is your work ethic.
Yes.
You know, and it's the truth. You can, you may not be the smartest person around a boardroom table, but if you can outwork everybody else around that table, chances are you're going to win 9 times out of 10. So,
absolutely.
And a lot of people don't want to hear that message.
Yep.
Right? I don't know if you find that or not. A lot of people come up to you and say, what's the secret? How does it work? I said, you just got to hustle and you got to outwork everybody. And if you're not prepared to do that, there's nothing wrong with that, but maybe entrepreneurship's not for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or yeah. And another thing that is important is health. Like something that, you know, we've had such a successful last year and we worked so hard that my health did plummet. So this year I had to make a resolution and I had to carve out time to work with a personal trainer. So I hired a personal trainer, started working out regularly, started taking better care of my, you know, food intake, and yes, the morale, the mental health, everything just we're back to normal. But so you have to work really hard, remember about your health, you know, give back to the community, remember to spend time with your family, and maybe, yeah, watch less Netflix.
Right. What does Gary Vaynerchuk say all the time? Stop watching Lost.
Yes.
You know, for hours at a time.
Yes.
A lot of people I find are turned off by his message, but what they don't understand what Gary Vaynerchuk is actually saying is don't complain.
Mm-hmm.
And he says this applies to anything. If you're not happy with your, you know, friendship situation, then you need to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not happy in your marital situation, you need to work on it. He just happens to put this focus on business. He's not suggesting that everyone has to work the hours that he works. What he's saying is, if you want to have a successful business,
there's
no way around this. So you either want to do this or you don't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You got to do the legwork. You got to go out there and make the sales and talk to people and be kind and be really nice. You know, be very authentic and people see it. You got to have that passion. You got to find it. There's no magic formula. You got to keep trying. You know, kombucha is not the only thing I want to do in my life. There's so many other projects I have in my head. But because of restricted time and finances, you need to make money in life. I put all my passion into kombucha. It's almost like you narrow down what you can do. You find what's most passionate. You really go in there. And then, you know, now I'm finding that I love social media. And I put all my creativity into social media for my kombucha business, and same with everything else. Yeah, so, yeah.
Great. Earlier on, you mentioned, and we're almost out of time here, you mentioned community.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you perhaps do or want to do in the future from a community give back perspective?
Yeah, so one of the things that I'm really excited about is I'm excited when new companies come to the market. I know how hard it is being a small, you know, size entrepreneur to get on the market. And even for us, when we started, there was a little grant that gave us, I think, $600 to buy our first dehydrator to make those kale chips. And those grants are far and few in between. And I'd like to, as a company, Artisan Kombucha, I'd like to create a small grant or a scholarship, say $500, $600, that we, on an annual basis, give to an aspiring food producer or entrepreneur that wants to go into the food business and just needs to buy a certain piece of equipment or needs that money to just start, basically. And so I'd really want to reach out and help, because Ottawa is an interesting market. It is very government-oriented. The entrepreneurial spirit is blossoming. It's still very, you know, very fragile, and I'd like to, I don't want to be just the only one who has a successful business. I want like 20, 30, 100 of me with awesome, successful, interesting food businesses in Ottawa and around, so that we can all grow and Ottawa could be a really like a foodie destination on the map.
Very nice.
I'd like to support other people, yeah.
Where can listeners find out more about you or your company?
You can go on our website, artisankombucha.ca, so A-R-T-I-Z-E-N, kombucha, K-O-M-B-U-C-H-A.ca. You can go on our Instagram, Artisan Kombucha. You can go on our Facebook, Artisan Kombucha. Connect with us and, you know, send me a message, give us a like, and we'll get back to you.
Thanks very much, Dasha, for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. This is great.